Welcome to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. You are listening to a Trent presentation from November 2017. Mr. Martin Harnisch, Project Manager R&D Hohenstein Group presents A Brief History of Warming Clothing.
Hello everybody. My name is Martin Harnisch. I'm coming from Hohenstein Institute. And I will give a presentation called A Brief History of Warming Clothing. I've also joined the discussion panel before, and I think we all found out that there are several questions on human thermal regulation, how to test the thermal properties of clothing or textile-related products. And I will tell you at first on the thermal regulation, then on testing of fabrics, on thermal insulation, and also on sweat management, and also on what to do with the results. And in the end, I will give several examples on what we did at our research institute in different fields of thermal insulation. Starting, of course, with the fur of Ötzi, or how it is called in the British way, the frozen Fritz. And we will end up with heated textiles from a recent research project. But before I go into the detail of my presentation, please let me introduce Hohenstein Institute. Hohenstein Institute is a group of different institutes. The biggest part of it is the Independent Institute for Testing, Certification and Inspection. We have about 560 employees and about 530 are working there. I work for the Non-Commercial Research Institute. We are about 30 employees. And then there is a very small part, an academy for further training and continuing education, where we have seminars and something like this as well. I've already mentioned Hohenstein Institute. Here you have a top view of our headquarters in Bönnigheim near Stuttgart. But this is only one part. We also have branch offices all over the textile world, how I would call it. So in Asia, also starting in Africa, the United States, and so on. But all the testing nearly all the testing facilities, the laboratories are still here in Germany. We do a lot of testing, starting with chemical testing. Some of you may know Ökotex, although here you see more blue sign, but it's something similar. We also have a physical testing, the part I'm working in, the clothing physiology. We have a deal with human thermal regulation and the sweat management, insulation, and so on. Also, an hygienic medicine part. Also, what is very important for textiles worn close to the skin is the care or the laundering, the industrial laundering of clothing. On all these fields we are working in. My department I work in is called Function and Care. And as already mentioned, the main thing I do is clothing physiology. But we also offering our services on toys when it is on UV protection, for example, on colorimetry testing and certification of personal protective clothing and equipment. Then, human thermal regulation. In our discussion, the thermal regulation was more based on the clothing or the fabrics. But for me, it starts also with the human. Our discussion also showed this. When we want to find the right clothing system, we need to know what we want to do with it. The cause for this is that humans are homeotherm beings, so the temperature has to be kept, or the body core temperature has to be in a small range of temperature. So on the one hand, we have the heat production and heat release, and both things have to be balanced. On the heat production side, we have the metabolic heat production. This means what we are doing. Of course, our inner organs produce heat all the time. Then we have the activity, our muscles. They, when they are working, they also produce a lot of heat. The external energy they produce is very low. It's about just about 10%. So muscles produce 90% external load and 90% heat, which we have to lose in the end for the balanced state. When we look on the heat gain side, the heat production side, we also have to keep in mind that possibly due to the sun, we can get heat from the ambience. Or if the ambient temperature is higher than our body temperature, we also get heat back from the ambience. And when we want to release heat, there are four ways. There's a conduction, convection side, then we have radiation, and in the end, we also have sweat evaporation. The sweat itself does not cool. The sweat has to be evaporated because this is the heat release. And when we look on the heat release side, there's something to add as well, that when we change our ambient conditions, also our heat release possibilities or options are changing. For example, on the cold side, here it is 20. We have the most important thing is convection and conduction, and the sweating is very low. But when we go to temperatures above 35 degrees, then it's just the sweat evaporation the body can be cooled with. Those things I explained until now are the external factors, but they are also the internal factors, what is human thermoregulation. So the body has some procedures to keep body core temperature in a certain range of about maybe 3 degrees C, in extremes maybe a little bit more. On the cold side, we have the vasoconstriction. That means the blood is going out of the skin. The blood vessels get a smaller diameter, so there's less blood in the skin. Furthermore, the body tries to keep the most of the blood inside the inner core. This means the inner organs, and of course, the most important organ of us, the brain. It stops to blood well the feet and the hand. This is the cause why we feel cold at first at the hands and at the feet. So the body tries to keep the core at 37 degrees C. So at the feet, for example, in this example, we have just the 20 degrees C. Yeah, then of course we can elevate to some extent the metabolic heat production, but also our muscles will be innervated. At first, just in a very small way, where just the fibers are innervated, and you don't see anything. But in the end, it will be hard shivering and loss, of course, of motor control. If I'm shivering too much, I cannot drive properly or something like this. On the warm side, we have the complete difference. So we have vasodilations, so our blood vessels get wider. The blood perfusion of the skin is getting better, and therefore the heat loss through the skin. And the extremities are much better blooded. And of course, we start to sweat. This, until now, there was the human side, human thermoregulation. But in our panel discussion, I also mentioned something like social thermoregulation. And this is where the clothes is coming into the system. And you see, we also have to make up our minds about our activity, because the heat production can change from 80 watts up to 1,000 watts for very small durations. So the 80 watts would be a woman when sleeping, and this would be, for example, road bike racer at the end of the race when doing the last sprint, for example. So this heat production is very important when we go back to here, to our balance. Then we see here, heat production, metabolic heat. So if you want to say something about whether a closing system is appropriate, then we need to take into account our heat production, and we also see the ambient is also very important, and those things have to be taken into account by the closing system, or the closing system has to be adjusted to my heat production and to the ambient climate. Yeah. Then we also had a discussion on the testing of thermal insulation, for example. There are very, very easy tests, plate-to-plate tests like the torque meter. This is common only in Britain, I would say. It just measures conduction and no convection and radiation like we have when wearing clothing. So this is not so good from my point of view. What is also not the best way is thermal imaging with an infrared camera. You get such nice pictures, but when you want to say something on human thermoregulation, then it is very hard to interpret the results, because in this example, you just get the surface temperature of the jacket. And this surface temperature measured by the IR camera is also influenced, for example, by the color. If you have some light sources coming from outside, or the sun, for example. When we talk about our comfort, then we have to measure at our skin. And this is not so easy with the thermal images. Or you have to take out the clothes and take it on and off. I would say, when testing with subjects, then you better use sensors directly on the skin, and maybe further sensors on the inside the microclimate in the different layers of a clothing system. Yeah, then the sweat management. There are also a huge variety of tests. The easiest one is a droplet test. Put a water droplet on a fabric and have a look how it is absorbed or how fast. More then we can measure the water absorption just by weighing the fabrics after wetting. There are several wicking tests, vertical and horizontal wicking, and there are a lot of cup methods. What is not so good with those methods is that you don't get to know about the evaporative heat loss. You just measure, in this case, you measure the evaporation, but you cannot say something about evaporative heat loss. What is important, therefore we are sweating, therefore there has to be evaporative heat loss. The vertical and horizontal wicking is also not so good, because it says something about the spreading of a sweat droplet, but it does not say something about evaporation of this water droplet afterwards, and it does not say something on the sweat management or the water transport through the textile. So it's just spreading over the fabric. Of course, I would say, because I'm from Hohenstein, we developed the skin models. The skin models are the best. Additionally, the skin models are standardized by standards, by the ISO, by an ISO standard, but also by ISTM. With the standard skin model, you can measure thermal insulation and water vapor resistance, usually is called breathability. But on the other hand, we also established some additional values characterizing the sweat management in the porous state and also in liquid state of the sweat. Because we also got to know in the panel discussion, this makes a difference. The skin model was developed to test different fabrics. So with the skin model, we don't need a closing system. We can measure closing or something like a closing system, We cannot just measure textile fabrics, but we could also measure, for example, duvets or different combinations used for car seats or something like this. So this is not limited just to thin textiles, what is a huge benefit, I would say. And the skin model gives us the possibility, without tailoring, test a lot of different fabrics. And it's easy to use, and it is relatively inexpensive. The more expensive then are thermal mannequins, you can see here. They are much bigger than the skin model. You have to put it in the climatic chamber. You have to tailor or use ready-made clothing systems. So it is much more expensive. And before testing on a mannequin, you should reduce the number of fabrics to some t-shirts. Go a little bit more into details. You see here our mannequin. It is called Charlie. It is a copper mannequin. It was developed already in the 1980s. It is not able to sweat, but it also has different segments. So we can say something on insulation at the arms, at the feet, and so on. Then the much newer mannequin. It is called Sherlock. This mannequin is able to sweat. It has different sweat glands and an additional artificial skin to spread the sweat all over the body. And then we can also measure the sweat management of a real clothing system, as already discussed before in the panel discussion. So those two mannequins represent the standard man. So it means they are have a height of about 1.75 meters and a weight of about 75 kilograms. Here we have a children's mannequin called Charlene. So it is just smaller, much smaller. It represents a child of about 2 years. With this mannequin, we are able to test, for example, children's blankets, but also winter clothing or special sleeping bags. Then we also have models of body parts, like here you can see our movable sweating foot, so we can also say something on the sweat management and or the heat and moisture management of footwear. Before doing the tests with the mannequin, we should reduce our samples, and when we go to the subject trials, then we should even more reduce our samples, because subjects are changing and it is much more complicated, time-consuming. You need a climatic chamber, you have to control for their thermoregulation, you have to control for their activity inside the chamber, you have to equip them with sensors and so on. So testing with the subjects is very time consuming. And you have to do more than one test, because also our subjective feedback will change. So you have to do a lot of tests, or tests with more than one subject and more than one repetition. So this is very time and money consuming. But it is possible to simulate in the real use of the clothing system. You will find also out something about the fit of a garment. And so in the end, it is sometimes necessary to have those subject trials. We have a lot of experience on our laboratory testing in correlation with subject testing, so we can say a lot about conditions which we know, but we don't know all conditions. So sometimes it is necessary to have the subject trials as well. Then we come to the examples from our testing. I want to start in the Stone Age, like my presentation is called A Brief History of Warming Clothing. So we start in the Stone Age. At Hohenstein Institute, we had the option to characterize the heat and moisture management of the clothing worn by the Ötzi or frozen Fritz, like called in British English. And here you see the different layers of the clothing. It started with the first layer of goat leather and the second layer as well. Then there comes a... Oh no. This is the first layer. Then we have the second layer, which includes not only leather, but also fur from bears as well as from deers. And there is the last layer is out of swamp grass. And this is necessary for extra thermal insulation on the one hand, but also to keep away the wind and possibly the rain. This was very interesting to see on the one hand, and then to see about the results of thermal regulation in comparison to clothing of our days. So here I've plotted the thermal insulation of the whole clothing system and of the clothing system without this additional layer of swamp grass. And as you see, the state-of-the-art outdoor clothing offers a lot of more thermal insulation and is much more lightweight in comparison, especially to the version with the swamp grass. Possibly some of you know that Ötzi was found in the Alps, so he was crossing the Alps, and one could imagine how more lightweight the clothing for hiking will be. It is much more comfortable. It is less exhausting. And of course, if I'm less exhausted, I won't have to sweat too much. And then it comes to the next step of our testing. We also had a look on the sweat management of this clothing system worn by Ötzi. And there you see the very first layer out of goat leather. It offers nearly the same sweat transport. So high numbers are the better ones. And we can throw a line at about 800 grams per square meter an hour, where we say, okay, this is very good. So just the functional underwear of today is called very good. And but the goat leather is already good. The second layer out of deer leather offers much less liquid sweat transport in comparison to our functional underwear. With this example, we see that there was quite a small development from the Stone Age to nowadays. Then I want to jump into the next example, where we compared different concepts of thermal insulation. Of course, when wearing a loden or a suit jacket, you won't, like me today, I won't come up with a down jacket, just due to have the nice look from the loden or a suit jacket in comparison to a down jacket. When I go for hiking, I would think this down jacket would be too bulky, so I would wear a soft shell clothing garment, a clothing system. Again, we did our tests. As already mentioned, with the skin model, it is easy to start with more than one fabric. So we did here, we had two kinds of soft shells to compare, and then we reduced. We also see, or this is the water vapor resistance, so low values are the better ones. We see that the soft shell and the loden are approximately the same, and the down jacket has a much higher water vapor resistance. On the other hand, when we look on thermal insulation measured with the thermal mannequin, we see that the down jacket offers much higher thermal insulation than the soft shells and the loden jackets. And now we come to the point we had in the panel discussions, how to explain such numbers to the customer. One option could be this range of utility. Of course, we should skip some information out of this graph, but what we see is the temperature where we can use a closing system, and we see the humidity. And with our laboratory testing or our values from the laboratory testing and the known activity of the wearer, we can define by physiological models an upper limit we would face heat stress and the lower limit where we would freeze. And here we see the difference between the two soft shell jackets. As you remember, we had the same thermal insulation, but the soft shell jacket 2 had a much higher water vapor resistance. So the thermal insulation we can see here, it is nearly the same for both jackets, but the upper limit defined by the water vapor resistance is much higher for the soft shell jacket 2 than for the soft shell jacket 1. So when we know about the activity, we could set up something like this range of utility for a possible customer. One of my sayings at the panel discussion was there's not the wrong closing, it's just the wrong use of the closing. So if we have a look on the results of the down jacket and the load-in jacket, then we see here 2 points. Here at minus 5 degrees C, the load-in jacket is too cold. With the load-in jacket, we would feel too cold because it's underneath the limit of the load-in jacket. But on the other hand, at 10 degrees C and 50% humidity, the down jacket would be too warm to be worn. But the load-in jacket would be perfect because it's in the middle of the range of utility. We were talking, or until now, I just talked about the garments itself or the fabric we use for a closing system. But the fit also has an influence on thermal insulation and also on the water vapor resistance. To show that, we made a setup where we tested personal protective clothing in different sizes. To make it easier, I would focus on the first three clothing systems, and they are defined by different sizes of the mid and cold protective layer. So our mannequin is usually size 52. So this would be the appropriate size. S1 would be too small and S3 too big. And if we go to the result, we also scanned the closing systems to define the insulating air layers inside the closing system. And there we find out that the appropriate size offers about 100 cubic centimeters, while the too small is about 85. The too big in brackets closing system offers the highest insulating air layers. And this we also see then in the results for thermal insulation, because the air is insulating inside the closing system, and we see this clearly here when we have a look on S1, 2, 3. The too small closing system has the lowest thermal insulation due to the lowest insulating air volume. So this is in standing conditions. But then if you go to the walking condition, we could also simulate with our mannequin the differences become much smaller, and just the very small fitting closing system still has a lower thermal insulation. When we look on the appropriate size and the bigger size, there's no difference. This is because if the closing has a too wide fit, then these air layers, when walking, can get out of, for example, at the sleeves or here at the neck. And this something like this is related to the tailoring of the closing system, and we can see this also with our measurements with the thermal mannequin. Then we also have focus, or from time to time, we also have materials for special purposes. For example, duvets for children or duvets for hospitals. They have to be laundered a lot. The children or patients don't get ill again. And there you can't use downs for insulation, for example. And also for industrial laundering, I would say downs are not the best way due to the drying, but maybe Mrs. Hedderich will tell us afterwards something more about this. The laundering and washing of duvets can cause problems. Let's say it like this. You can see also here, and here it was a non-woven fleece, and it agglomerated, and so it cannot offer the appropriate thermal insulation as it has before the laundering. And a possible solution could be 3D spacer fabrics. And with a research partner, we developed a special 3D spacer fabric for duvets. And there we found the proper way also spacer fabrics which can be laundered. In comparison to the non-wovens, this is the non-washed state and this is the washed state. So there you have a great reduction of thermal insulation just due to washing. But it's just an example, could be different for other products. Then I want to give an example on innovative fabrics. Phase change materials, we already heard at the beginning in the panel discussion, you also found in the brochures. The idea of this phase change materials is that the heat capacity is changing at the temperature of phase change. So usually when you put heat into a system, then temperature goes up. But at the temperature of this phase change, you put in further heat, but temperature stays the same. Just after a certain time or a certain heat, temperature will go to rise. This is already used in insulation materials for buildings, and since the 1980s, also used in the spacesuits by NASA. Both applications don't have to care about the weight which is used, so we can put in a lot of phase change materials into the insulation of a building and into spacesuits. Nowadays, we have a great variety of products, also with phase change materials in t-shirts, socks, and something similar. And our question was, do phase change material work also in this application? To find a solution on that, we started a research project, and just some examples. We coded some non-wovens in our web. We had a control without PCM, and then different amounts of PCM. And when you have a look on here, the non-treated one is 5 grams, and heavily coated is 36 grams, the sample. Then you see there's a lot of coating at this sample, and it was much stiffer than textile usually is. Then we went into testing with our heat release tester Watson. The WAT stands for the German abbreviation of Wärmeabgabetester, and I think the Watson is a nice name to tell. And there we have a copper plate which is heated to a certain temperature, and the fabric is put on top, and we control the surface temperature and measure the heat necessary to maintain this temperature. And there we see the results for our samples, the non-treated one and the three treated ones, we see that with the rising amount of phase change material from low to middle to high, there's an effect we can show. But on the other hand, when we have a closer look, then we see that after 10 minutes, the effect of this phase change material is gone. And remember, especially at this high dotation, we have a very huge amount of phase change material in it. We also made a subject test, and we also saw that after 10 minutes, there's no effect of phase change materials. So our conclusion is we could show an effect, but it's so small and so short that there's no effect on human thermoregulation and nearly no effect on the perception of a wearer. Solution for that could be to add more phase change material, but I don't think this is the best way. Possibly the question should be what could be done with this additional weight instead. And this leads us to heated textiles. We also made a research project on this, and we were focusing on high comfort according closing physiological tests. Again, we started with different products from the markets, outdoor jackets, underwear. We also included heated fabrics with internal or external heating and at different sides of the body. Yeah, at first we started with the skin model again. There we could show differences. And we also did testing with the thermal mannequin. This is the nude state with standard clothes, the additional closing layer with the heating system, but without heating, and then two levels of heating. And we could see that even the first level of heating is elevating the thermal insulation. In the end, we also did subject tests because with this heated textiles, it was nothing we could simulate. And there we also see differences between the unheated and then the different levels of the heating. So those heatable textiles work, or in our experiments, they work. We see differences in the skin temperature, the blue and the red line, and also in the, no, this is the temperature at the thigh, temperature at the back, and the subjective temperature. And it goes nearly in parallel. We also did tests with the subjects at different heating sites. So the first one was at the trousers. And then we had a comparison between heating at the underwear, directly at the skin, and heating a vest in the, I would say it was the second layer. And there we see some differences. When we compare, the curves at the underwear are always running above the curves of the vest. So our conclusion would be that the heatable textiles should be worn close to the skin. At the end, I want to thank all our research partners, my colleagues at the Hohenstein Institute, and additional thanks for our funding agencies for the financial support. And then thank you.
Thank you for listening to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. To get your free ticket for the next fair or listen to other presentations, go to performancedays.com. Copyright November 2017 by Design and Development GmbH Textile Consult. All rights are reserved.